Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So, all right, Albert, how you doing, man? What's going on?
What's happening? Keith was keeping me busy there.
I know, man. Every time we have this awkward delay because Keith's chewing your ear off.
Well, I ask him better questions than you guys do.
if we're going to talk about last Saturday, you know, it's pretty hard to get me to shut up right now. So that's all I have to do.
Albert is the most objective person I know, except when it comes to Ohio State.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah,
anything else, you're very objective, incredibly. But when it comes to Ohio State, you're definitely biased. Did you think they were going to lose in the first half?
I didn't know we'd given up on the game. I think during the end of the third quarter, being in the fourth quarter, I was like in the process of giving up on the season. So
wow.
I've got all the psycho fan tendencies, I think, when it comes to them. The weird thing is, guys, is that, like, I feel like since Urban got there, there's one of those every year, which means it's not a fluke, you know? It's just somehow, like, when they don't have their A game, they're able to summon this, like, whatever it is, will, whatever you want to call it, where they're able to pull one out that they really have no business winning. And remember, I felt like the Wisconsin game a couple of years ago was that way, and, there was an Indiana game a few years ago that was like that, too. It's just... it's just unbelievable, and this is another one of those.
Albert, so, I still can't believe they handed off to the tailback on that last play, Paul, at Penn State. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some explanations of it, like that it was that they were running read option, and the idea was to get Trace the ball, and that Shiano actually, like the call, basically forced Trace to give it, and that they found a way to screw up the read, and then of course it winds up going to Miles Sanders and Chase Young's waiting for him. So, I mean, I think to me it's like just get the ball in Trace's hands, whether he's running or throwing, just make sure the ball's in Trace's hands. That's the guy that I think you got to trust the game to in that situation, right?
Absolutely,
yes.
And I thought it was a mistake. I mean, give him a chance to do something instead of just a terrible play call, but. Nonetheless, I'm happy. I'm happy.
I'll tell you what. I'm glad we're not playing Trace McSorley again.
Oh, that kid's special. You think he's got a shot in the NFL or no?
I think the quarterback there is probably. I think Baker's probably at least opening people's minds to the idea. Doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to happen. And I don't know that Trace has the arm talent that that Baker does.
Better athlete though, much better athlete than Baker.
Yeah, I mean, like Baker is a like top shelf passer. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know that Trace is in his class as a passer, but the playmaking ability. I know it's the easy thing to do because it's like the shorter white guy playing quarterback running around. You know, and for the same reason, it was easy to compare Johnny to Baker. It's easy to compare Baker to Trace. But there's definitely shades of Baker Mayfield in the way Trace McSorley plays. I mean, it's just, in certain ways, he feels like a very, very similar player, even though their skill sets aren't really identical.
Albert, it wasn't a perfect starting debut for Baker Mayfield. He did turn the ball over a bunch of times. But I think there was so much good that you saw there.
Yeah.
And it feels like, it's way too early to say for sure, I get it. But it feels like the Browns have finally gotten it right at that position.
I agree. I was actually just watching I knew what was coming on with you guys. I just pulled up the NFL.com highlights, and it's like a 17-minute highlight compilation. And, I've gone through it, and it's just some of the throws you see him make, the look, the way the ball comes off his hands, being able to put it in spots. I mean, there was one play, it was on a third and one, in the second quarter, where I don't know how he got the ball off. I think he dumped it off to Joku. I'm not positive. I'm now blanking on who it was, but it was on third and one, and he got himself out of trouble somehow. He had two guys right in his face, and he somehow like sidearmed the ball around. The ball was probably 5 yards in the air, but the fact that he just got it there was amazing. You see, I mean, there's another play. I think it was to Fells down the middle of the field where. Not only did he put it in the position for Fells to catch it, but like also turn up the field and run with it. You're seeing a lot of good. I don't think there's any question about that. Anybody who had any questions about his physical ability, I don't know what they're watching at this point. He's got what you need, and he's got this intangible quality that I think pushes him through some of the mistakes that he's going to make inevitably. And that's what was so impressive about it was, you know, when those mistakes did come, I mean, there was no quitting him. He just kept coming.
Albert, you think Lincoln Riley's a coach in the NFL next year?
I think he's going to get offers. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be in the NFL next year. I think he knows he's got a great job at Oklahoma, and a job at Oklahoma that's probably better than a lot of NFL jobs. And he's got some job security there. But I think that his phone, his agent's phone, I think the phone's going to be ringing. And I think NFL teams are going to be interested in hiring Lincoln Riley, particularly because I think to some degree the pipeline is running a little dry as far as NFL assistants go. And that's a result of, you know, so many teams turning over their operation every 2 and 3 years. I mean, it's just, you don't have many hot names at the NFL level where you're saying, okay, like that guy's going to be a head coach next year. And so I think, you know, that plus the fact that teams are way more open-minded to doing college-type things, I think it's put Lincoln Riley in a position where he's going to have a lot of offers, or he's going to have a lot of opportunities over the next couple of years in the NFL. And I think that, really that's going to be up to him whether or not he wants to go. But I think that'll be there for him. And to me, it's a result of seeing, you know, his ability to develop a quarterback, what Baker looks like in the NFL right now, I think helps. And the other thing that helps is that he's kept it going with Kyler Murray as his quarterback. So, you know, it tells you that, A, he can develop a quarterback, and, B, it wasn't all about that one quarterback. You know, it's really a system that works and can work with different players. And, I just tell you, like, I think that he's going to have a very, very good shot to do it. And there are lots of NFL people that have been through Norman, Oklahoma, over the course of the last year to try to learn from him.
The Browns could be looking for a coach at the end of the year, Albert. First of all, if you had to bet today whether or not Hugh gets fired, where would you bet? And if you bet he gets fired, would Lincoln Riley be the Browns' top choice or one of them?
I don't know. I honestly, I'd have to wait to see the season turn out. I mean, you could even give me a record, but I wouldn't be sure. I think the way it looks at the end of the year is as important as anything else. You know, like, what does it look like in December? Where's the development of young players? I mean, I almost think that part of it's unrelated to the record. It's just, you know, where is the program at the end of 2018? I think that's as important as anything else. If they were going to make a move, I think you would make that call to Lincoln Riley. The big question, of course, is, you know, would he be able to put a staff together at the NFL level? Coming in, would it be good for Baker to go back to, you know, having his college coach again? With some of the things that he does work at the NFL level, is he willing to adjust to a different set of circumstances, different conditions in the NFL? There are a ton of questions there, but, based on how Baker played in 3 years under Lincoln Riley, two as his offensive coordinator, one as his head coach, you know, I don't think there's any question that there would be a certain level of appeal there.
We're seeing a lot of this college stuff translating to the NFL, right, Albert? I mean, yep. McVay in L.A., you know, Goff was an air raid quarterback in college at Cal, and it seems like a lot of the stuff that they're doing with the Rams now is some of the same concepts that you saw in college, too, with him.
No doubt about it. It's all over the place, Dustin. I mean, you know, the coolest thing is, like, that one of the guys who's kind of, a leader in this is Andy Reid, who, has been head coach for 20 years in the NFL, right? Like, if there's anybody who's, you know, would seem to be in a position to be stuck in his ways, it would be Andy Reid. And yet, he's at the forefront of all of this. And you look at his assistant coaches, and they're taking it out of there and implementing it in other places. Doug Peterson in Philadelphia, Matt Nagy in Chicago. I think that's one of the coolest storylines of the early part of this year, is how much more open-minded NFL coaches are now to doing different things and doing things that might have been dismissed 10 or 15 years ago. I just remember, you know, watching the Tom Osborne, Nebraska teams with Tommy Frazier and Scott Frost, and remember watching, you know, Florida with Steve Spurrier running the show and Danny Werfel and Doug Johnson. And, you know, I remember at the time if you brought the idea up back then that, like, those things could work in the NFL, you get dismissed. And NFL people kind of look their nose down at those things. And I feel like now there's, like, a a lot more open-mindedness to doing things the college way and doing and taking contests from the college level. And not that all of it works, but I think, you know, seeing that explosion in offensive creativity is in large part due to the fact that all these coaches are getting a lot more open-minded about the idea of doing things a different way. And I'll tell you what, you guys have watched the Chiefs this year, right?
Yeah.
You guys watched the Chiefs. You guys have watched the Bears on Sunday.
Yep.
You've seen what the Eagles have done the last couple of years. Not only is it working, it's a blast to watch.
Yeah. No doubt, Albert. And speaking of, you know, like coaches that are kind of stuck in their ways, Hugh Jackson today, when he was asked, you know, because the Browns went for two, their first three touchdowns, right? Yep. It was unusual. I loved it. It was gutsy. It was aggressive play. Hugh Jackson was asked today if that was because of analytics, did that factor in? And he laughed at it, which I thought was ridiculous. And then, like, Dustin and I, Dustin and I are not conventional wisdom here, but we both believe that, you know, when they reversed that first down, they made it a fourth and inches?
Yeah.
At the 19, we would have gone for it because it's a quarterback sneak for 6 inches, game's over. I know it's not conventional wisdom, but it's showed aggressive.
It's probably like a 95%. I mean, the average on fourth and one in the league
on quarterback sneaks
is 85%.
Yeah.
Fourth and inches, it's got to be over 95%. You win the game. And
I think coaches that you're mentioning would have gone for it in that situation.
And analytics do play into it. And, yeah. You know, one of the problems with, and I think you see it too, like with some of the new coaches. I mean, it didn't work for Frank Reich in Indy. It did work for Mike Vrabel in Tennessee, right? But both those guys, I'll tell you what, they probably won the locker room with those moves, right? Because
yeah.
when you do things like that, you know what you're saying? You're saying to the players, I believe in you guys to get this done. And, you know, I'm putting my trust in you. Go get it. And I think in both cases, even though the Colts lost, in both cases, you know, that goes a long way for a coach, you know? And so, I mean, I think it is analytics-based. I think there is, you know, kind of an intangible value to it, too. It's interesting. I mean, I think part of it, too, is just, you know, a lot of teams are going to be copycatting the team that won it all the year before, and the Eagles did a lot of it under Doug Peterson last year.
That's right.
And so that stuff, I mean, to me, I think that stuff's fascinating. And, you know, there is some resentment towards the term analytics. And you can certainly understand why what that might exist in the Browns building after the last couple of years. I would just tell you guys that, like, I did a big story on this a couple of years ago, and one of the conclusions that I came to was that part of the issue with analytics in football is that they've existed forever. That's what quality control coaches are. A lot of the research projects that the football coaches have been doing for 30 and 40 years would fall into the analytics category. Some of these other sports, baseball and basketball, were starting from zero, whereas football was already sort of, you know, on that path. And so in some of these buildings, you had analytics people coming in and saying, well, this is how you do it. And the football people are looking at them and saying, well, we've been doing some of this stuff for a long time. Why do we need these guys here? So there's sort of like a natural tension there where some coaches are hesitant to call anything analytics because they say, well, we've been doing this stuff for a long, long time. Kind of an interesting element to all of that.
Albert, great stuff, man, as always. We'll talk to you
again
soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Talk to you, man.
Albert Breer.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.